Hello and welcome back to the Second and Two podcast. I'm your host, TB. I've got my co-host, producer extraordinaire, all around best guy, Jody. What up, Joe?
What's good, bro? Hey, how long has it been since you said those words?
Like 6 months.
Dang, it's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a while. Sorry, everybody. Been too busy.
It happens. I'm not trying to knock you. I'm just saying it's been a minute since I've heard those words hit my earphones.
Yeah. I was thinking about it and I was, going on here and I was thinking like, do I still know how to use this thing?
Is this thing on? That's the better question.
Is it working?
Just how I said, I using it right? Good to record, and I still had it on no recording coming through. So, but now we're live.
We are looking live. All right, so it's been a while. So let's just recap. What have we been up to the last couple months, Jody?
For me, nothing crazy. Just work and more work. And but in terms of more recently, like I went to 2 Ram games, 2-0 in those.
Nice,
easy money. Got the bobblehead last week. We snuck that in barely. It was nice. What's it called? Johnny got married last weekend.
Congrats to my guy.
Anything else that's new? Oh, I'm getting a new work schedule. I told you about that. That'll be changing up here soon, moving from nights to mornings. Other than that, though, kind of been the same old guy. Nothing new.
Nice, dude. Congrats to your brother.
Yeah, congrats to him and Ellie for sure.
That's pretty sweet, man. For me, since we last talked, finally, finished my first season as a head football coach. Good times.
That beanie on your head, pretty new, huh?
Oh yeah. We went 2-3 in our district and got the fourth seed, so we made the playoffs. We're pretty banged up to finish the season, though. Went into the last game already without one of our top two receivers, who also happens to be one of our top defensive backs, and then a guy who played, started both ways, O-line and linebacker for us. We were kind of without both those guys going into the game.
Was that 60?
And then,
or is that a different guy?
No, 57. Like at the very beginning of the game, first offensive series, like third play in, our quarterback got hurt and didn't return. So then we lost him. Yeah, and then we lost our guy playing left tackle early in the second quarter. So we were down 3 seniors and then our junior quarterback by the time the second quarter had kind of gotten underway. So we were in a tough spot, played a really, really good team. It was always going to be tough to play them, But when you're playing like without basically like any of your dudes, makes it pretty tough. So,
quarterback's a huge piece to that whole offense. He's running around everywhere. And then one of the receivers, regardless, they were
number gone. 8 was the one we were missing.
That was the guy.
Yeah. So my guy Jody did come see a game this year, so he knows kind of a lot of our personnel.
Time frame too.
yeah. So now we got Jody down to Texas. Actually, he went to New Mexico to watch us play our one game in New Mexico.
Yeah. That was a mile. That was a long day. Flew out of San Fran at 6, got down there, drove to your guys' spot, hung out with Jill for like an hour or two, got some food, drove to the game, then drove back.
No doubt, man. Fun times. We played like a really, really tough non-district schedule, which prepped us for our district. And like I said, we went 2-3 there. Some of those injuries kind of started happening in the back half of that district schedule. So we didn't finish it the way we wanted to. We were alive to win the district with 2 weeks to go and lost the last two games. And that's about, when some of those injuries happened. So that's kind of – we finished – the season with, I guess you would say on a lower note, not the way we wanted to, just because of, some of the injuries, which I hate, it's a lame excuse, but, We weren't extremely deep this year. We were really reliant on some of the top end talent we had. So when those guys went down, we knew it was going to be a tough way to finish. But regardless, good season. I enjoyed it tremendously. And I'm looking forward to continuing in that capacity as a head coach, because it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work.
Yeah,
but it's a lot of fun. Hence why we haven't been on this podcast for the entirety of football season. This is the first time we're actually getting on here. We basically did our last podcast right before I think football got going, and then since then, we haven't been on. So but excited to get on today. Excited to talk some football. I haven't had the opportunity to really do that this year, despite the tough schedule I've been keeping. We've definitely had the opportunity to watch a lot of football, whether it's college or the NFL. So excited to talk about it today and get this rolling.
Yeah. I mean, considering we're going to be talking about these Thanksgiving games, what was the best thing you ate yesterday?
Ooh, went to Jill's parents' house, and, they do a nice spread. All right. So we had, you know, the turkey, the ham, homemade rolls, elite. Whether you call it stuffing or dressing, you know, it kind of depends on where you're from. I'm a stuffing guy, being from California, but a lot of people in the South call it dressing. In Texas, it's kind of split, but most of her family was calling it dressing yesterday. So the dressing was elite. I would assume elite.
That was a sauce or something, if you asked.
No. The dressing was elite. We had like a Jill makes a green bean casserole with some turkey bacon. Very good. Mac and cheese casserole. Pretty good.
Is that just not mac and cheese? Is there other stuff in there?
No, it's like more of a...
Or is it just like fried in like the oven?
It was made on the grill.
Oh. That's different.
Yeah, it's different. And it was really good. So, let's see. We had some just pinto beans. Not a traditional Thanksgiving piece for me, but really good. Really good. No cornbread. No. We had the homemade rolls, dude. That's the maximum amount of bread you get right there. and then we also had like a cheesy rice bake thing that was also very good. I just at one point I didn't even know what I was eating because it was just all on the plate and I was just kind of
That's how, you know what I mean? Goes. You got the juices leaking to some other stuff, and it's kind of all
amazing. Oh, the mashed potatoes too. I mean, the mashed potatoes were elite. So, all of it was good. There's not really anything I can pinpoint and say, just like you put it all on the plate, you're eating it all together. It was all good. I would say the homemade rolls, very, very good. That was a nice touch. Pumpkin pie, kept it simple, you know. We have Jill and I had our own apple pie with the vanilla ice cream. You know, can't go wrong there either. So pretty simple, basic desserts, but all really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what about you? We did a tri-tip Johnny made some cheesecake. It wasn't anything too big. It was just us at the house. So we had a green bean casserole. Some scalloped potatoes. Those are good from the Costco ones. You throw them in the oven. We made cornbread. That was another one on the list. And what else? There was like one more thing. I don't know. Oh, it was just like veggies, just like steamed veggies. It was solid. Mm.
Well done. No no turducken for you? Or
no, we were watching on the TV. All the dudes were eating. It looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Every year it does.
I've always thought, like, man, one of these years, love you to try it. Just to try it. It looks so good, but I think seems like it's like a full week project to make. If you're gonna do it, you gotta like really prepare yourself. So I've never done it, but always thought, hey, maybe one year.
you gotta outsource. Speaking that. Of, just ordered in one time.
Yeah. Speaking of the Turducken and John Madden, we gotta get to the Thanksgiving Day games. Little review here. First game, Jody, who'd we have?
We had the Packers at Lions at 10 a.m. for us West Coast dudes. Yeah,
did you notice? Am I tripping Or did that game used to start at 9 a.m. your
I'm
time?
I'm pretty sure it was 12 9. Eastern. There was more gaps in between. They kind of rolled it like a Sunday day where it was like 10, 1, 5. Where okay. I think before, like you said, it was 9, you had like an hour break, and then it was the next game, like an hour break, and then
that was okay, it. So they just kind of pushed it back so they didn't have any kind of, it was just boom, boom, boom. Is that what we're saying?
I think
because I swear that game used to start earlier, and I was confused yesterday, and I was like, man, when did this happen?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure
it was earlier in the past.
Anyway, what happened in that Packers-Lions game?
Well, the biggest, earliest takeaway was Amon-Ra went down, which was tough. You know, yep. It was
tough.
He got rolled up
people.
On by the linemen. That was brutal mm-hmm. to see. Then we had, you know, Jordan Love going out there, making some plays, a couple moon balls throughout the game.
He loves throwing off that back foot, too.
Yeah,
just throwing a shot. These guys go make plays for him. Let's hope Amon-Ra St. Brown is good. Nasty looking ankle injury, so hopefully he's good long term. But yeah, Jordan Love looked good. 234, 4 touchdowns. Packers got a sweep of the Lions.
They played twice.
Let's start.
Here? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they opened the year. Remember, the Packers opened the year and dominated them week one.
Yeah, everyone was like, Packers might be nice. Here we are. Like, are they good? Are they not good?
So let's start with the losing team. Let's start with the Lions. All right. And my big question for the Lions moving forward, you know, we the big deal was made over Dan Campbell taking over play calling, right? And the first game. The first game that it was confirmed he was, or at least that he confirmed that he was calling the plays, was the Commanders game. Now, there's a lot of rumors that it was happening before that, right? That it was happening before then, so we don't know for sure. But I was like, you know, let me look at the splits between when he was confirmed to being the play caller and before that, right?
Yeah.
And so, all right, so let's look at this. In their eight games, their first eight games before we knew for a fact that Dan Campbell was the one calling the plays, the Lions were 5-3, and they're averaging 29.8 points per game. All right, so not too bad. Almost 30 points a game. 5-3, kind of hoping a little better, but you're like, hey, if one game just goes a little bit different, maybe they're 6-2. All right.
Yeah.
In the four games since we knew for sure he's been the play caller, they're 2-2. Including they had to have that crazy comeback overtime win against the Giants. They very easily could be 1-3 right now.
Okay.
And they're only averaging 27.75 points per game. So their points per game average has gone down over 2 full points.
Yeah.
And so you're asking yourself, like, I don't know, should Dan Campbell still be the play caller? And or maybe he's been calling it, maybe we're being unfair, and maybe he's been calling the plays for a lot longer, and so those stats are not even correct. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's the level of competition they've played recently. I mean, they've played the Eagles.
I thought that's
and
what
the
you're
Packers.
Saying with the, when they played the Commanders, that was the first game. I thought that's what you were going with that story.
I mean, yes, the Commanders are not very good this year, so sure. Like, but even, again, you look at it and you're like, okay, other than that Commanders game, the three games since then has not been very good, right? You score 9 points against Philly. You have to come back and go crazy to beat the Giants in OT. And then yesterday they were not bad offensively, don't get me wrong, but they weren't good enough to win the game, right? So the big question I have for them moving forward, right? And they're now at a, you know, at 7-5, and they're in a tough spot. They're going to have to you know, 6 games to go, you figure 11-6 is probably what gets you in, right? Or 5 games to go, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and
that means they probably got to go 4-1 the rest of the way to make the playoffs. And so they've kind of put themselves in a tough spot here with 5 games to go.
Guaranteed now. It's all bad.
Yeah, so, you know, the Lions got to figure it out on offense. Their defense has been elite. Jordan Love played really well yesterday. It's tough to fault that defense too much. It wasn't like they played bad. Jordan Love just played amazing. So interesting to see what the Lions do moving forward. Again, it's a short, small sample size. And so we'll see how things move forward with Dan Campbell's play caller. This is not to say that he shouldn't be the play caller, but the question really is just how much has really changed since he took it over and confirmed he was the play caller. And we'll see.
The only thing I'll say on that play calling front is my guy was going for it on every fourth down possible. He's wild card out there. I know that's his style of play. There's got to be a time where you're like, I just need these points. You know what I mean?
And that's, I mean, I think there's a an element to, like, when you're going to go for it and you're going to be that team, then Dan Campbell says, I got to do it all the time because I'm playing the percentages, right?
Yeah.
If I convert more often, then even the ones I don't convert, right, aren't enough to deter me from getting all the ones that I normally will convert. So, I don't know. He's playing the percentages there. It's easy the day after a loss to say, well, you're an idiot. You know, you're doing this, that, and the third. And, hey, it's a long season, so we'll see how it plays out for him. It may flip the next five games. It may be that they win some of those games. Because in the last 3 years, they've won games because he went for it. So, it goes both ways there. So I am interested, like I said, to see how the season finishes for them and how it finishes offensively, specifically with him as the play caller. The Packers, right, on the winning side of this, they are now back on track to win the division. Yes, the Bears are in front of them at 8-3. And I believe the Packers are what now 7-3-1, I believe, like is that, where they're at. Yeah. So they're tied with the Bears on losses. The Bears play today, Black Friday, against the Eagles.
In a few minutes.
you would have to – we haven't been on this podcast all year, so I haven't really told anybody. You know, nobody knows how we feel about some of these teams, whatever. To me, the Bears are the team this year that you're just like, man, I don't know if their record shows – who they actually are. They are a much improved football team from the year before.
Oh, you're saying they're inflated?
I don't know if they're an 8-3 division winning football team, right? And so I would imagine this catches up to them. I would imagine Philly gets right against them today, although Philly is kind of on a downward trend right now. So maybe the Bears get them. But there's still two games left for the Packers against the Bears. So those are going to be the two games that determine that division. Whoever went, you know what I mean? That those are going to be the two games that determine the division. They have the Bears next week. So regardless of what the Bears do against Philly, Green Bay can take over the division next week by beating them at that point. And so I do think Green Bay is on track to win this division. They also have some tough games left against the Ravens and the Broncos. So we'll see.
Get to the Ravens a little later.
Yes. We'll see where that division finishes, but I think yesterday's win was a statement from the Packers to say, hey, we are still the favorites to win this division, even though the Bears have a half game lead on them right now. Yeah. And we'll see where that stands at the end of today. So very, very intrigued to see where that division finishes. Intrigued to see if the Lions can get right and make the playoffs. Intrigued to see if the Packers can continue getting better and win the division, or if the Bears are going to just be for real. You know, we'll find out. Okay, second game of the day. What do we have, Jody?
We had the Chiefs at Jerry Land in Dallas. We had our guy Patty Mahomes. He was wheeling and dealing, but his guys weren't holding on. It was tough to see. Everything would just go straight through their hands, or some wild things that we've seen from his receivers. We had Dak, CD, George Pickens all kind of go nuts. I wish Pickens got a touchdown. That would help me out a lot on my slips. But Dak had a good game. 300 yards, 320, I should say. Two touchdowns. CD had one of those with 112 yards. George Pickens had 88 yards and a 2-point conversion.
Dude, that trio, and I'll get to them more in depth here in a second, but that see Dak, CD, and Pickens might be the best trio in offensive football in the league right now. They are one of the most productive groups of offensive players right now. Not a lot of teams can rival the firepower that the Cowboys have on offense right now. It's pretty impressive to watch. Pickens is by far having his best year.
Big resurgence.
It sort of helped them, I think, that CD missed a chunk of the year
and be the man.
Yeah, now that they have them both, Dak is doing a good job. I mean, think about it. Those two dudes had a 200 yards between the two of them yesterday. You know, if you got two guys who are going to get you 100 yards and a couple touchdowns a game, that kind of production, you don't need any of the other guys to be crazy. I mean, and they've had some other players step up, some of the other skill kids, some of the running backs have played well, Javonte Williams and mm-hmm. whatnot. So they're a very productive offense right now. Dak has done a really good job, but I'll get to the Cowboys here in a second. Let's start with the Chiefs as the losers of this game. Can they play a full game of complimentary football? Right. I feel like people have been on their offense, you know, been on their offense for a few weeks now. It's not explosive. It's not this, it's not that. Mahomes isn't, you know, the O-line's not giving them time. They're not running the ball as well as they did. And then it was kind of like, hey, they put one together against the Colts there. And they really grinded it out, right? It was running the football with Kareem Hunt like 30 times. Yeah. It was Mahomes taking off and scrambling. Rashee Rice finally showed up. And their defense did a good job of like withstanding that early onslaught from the Colts and keeping them in the game and eventually winning in overtime. So feels like, man, okay, the Chiefs, maybe they're getting it right. And then you watch yesterday and it's just, you know, their offense looked good. The defense did not. So can they play a full game consistently of complementary football, right? Seems to struggle on offense when the defense is playing well, seems to struggle on defense when the offense is playing well. And now they're 6-6. They are, you know, it's funny because you ever seen that meme on social media, right, where the guy's looking at the test tube and he's like, finally, it's pure mid, right? That's the Chiefs right now. Pure mid, right? They are pure mid. They are, I mean, 6-6 is the record they should be. That's about the kind of football they're playing. Again, they haven't played a full complimentary game very often this season. I think the Chiefs is the closest one to it. And even that one, it kind of felt like their offense struggled, but they grinded it out and got a win, right?
Yeah, I mean, piggybacking off of that too, it's like this is the same thing. If they win all these games, they're not in this position, and it's the same thing they did last year. Last year they won like six of their one score games or whatever, and this year that's not the case.
And it's definitely flipped. It's definitely flipped. Yeah. You are correct on that. If you look at the remaining schedule, right? Because it is kind of funny because everyone's like, oh, the Chiefs, they're not this, they're not that, right? They're 6-6.
Might not make it.
But everybody knows if they make it in the playoffs, do you want to see them? If you, your favorite team, do you want to see them in the playoffs? No, heck no, you don't.
I mean, nobody wants this team. Who haven't they lost to? That's at the top of their thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But do you trust all those teams to beat them again? Are you going to pick against them?
Why not?
Oh, dude, I'm not picking. If they make it in, I ain't picking against them until probably the AFC Championship game. Honestly,
all those games on the road.
Yes, Mahomes is that. Come on, man. Mahomes and Reed are that good.
Okay, well, while we're on
until they're dead,
there was a stat yesterday saying this is the most penalty yards they've had in like 6 years. The times are changing, man.
Oh, don't give me that crap. Oh, the refs are on their side. Now they're suddenly not. Don't give me that. Okay, all right. So let's look at the remaining schedule. Because here's the thing. In order to be like the dangerous team no one wants to see, they got to get in first. And right now, they don't look like they're going to get in. So you got to look at it. Okay. Next week, they get the Texans at home. You know that's going to be a grinder. No matter what the score is or who wins it, that thing's going to be a grinder because the Texans play freaking good defense. The Chiefs just lost their tackle, Simmons, from Ohio State. They just lost that guy. He's going on IR. All right. So you know those two edge rushers at the Texans are going to get after Mahomes. He's going to have to play really well on time. And if he's not on time, he better get out of there quick because those dudes are going to go get him.
I was going to say, he's going to be scrambling.
You also know that could be a game, though, where defensively they can get after the Texans. It feels like a grinder like the playoff game was last year. Somebody wins that game 20-17. You know what I mean? And it's an Arrowhead. They seem to play better at home this year. All right, so you get the Texans. Then you get the Chargers at home. Similar deal to the Texans game. It's a grinder, right? That's going to be a grind. The Texans, you know, the Chargers have played better as of late, but the Chargers got them earlier in the year. Could see the Chiefs getting that one, all right? Okay, then they got to go to the Titans. On the road, that should be a winnable game on the road, right? Going then they Tennessee. Get the big one is week 17. They get the Broncos at home.
It's a grinder, regardless.
They're going to have to win that one. to have a shot. And then
those games go under every year, year after year.
And then you go to, you finish at Vegas. All right. So, which again, you feel like should be a win. Can they win all five of those games? 100%. But it's going to take the best effort of, you know, Mahomes and Andy Reid. It's going to take the best effort of that defense. The good news is their two remaining road games should be wins. Like you should count those right now.
Two of those, yeah.
Those, the three tough ones are all at home. And like I said, they've played better at home. So it's just going to be tough because they can't go 10-7 and be tied with Jacksonville, who's also 10-7, because Jacksonville gets the tiebreaker, right? They can't go, you know, if they lose to, you know, the Texans, that's another tiebreaker they would lose out on, right? The Chargers right now, you know, you'd have to beat those guys and you have to have the better division, you know, divisional record, but at the end of it, because, you know, the Chargers would have a tiebreaker with you because they beat you earlier in the season if they end up with the better divisional record. So there's a lot of tie-breaking scenarios right now that they just lose out on. So for them, or even the Bills, if the Bills are a wild card, they lost to them, right? So
yeah,
no matter what, it feels like they got to be 11-6 and above everyone to get in, because if they're 10-7 and they end up in a huge tiebreaker deal, seems like they're going to lose out there. So that's why everyone's kind of pushing panic button right now, because they're 6-6. And it feels like they got to win out and be 11-6 in order to get in. So it will be interesting to see. Can they do it? Heck yeah, I think they can. And if they do and they go into the playoffs having won five in a row and you're telling me you're going to take somebody else, good luck. Good luck, because I won't. I just tell you right now, I won't. There's a reason that team hasn't not been to the AFC Championship game at least since Mahomes became the starter. All right, so we'll see. I'm not ready to count them out yet, but it is a tough road they've put themselves in.
Yeah.
For sure. Flip side of that, Cowboys. All right. Cowboys are now 6-5-1. And you're like, huh, the defense is playing better. We just talked about that trio being one of the best ones in football right now.
Yeah.
What about them? Can they find their way in the playoffs, right? With this new and improved defense? Man, the seventh seed in the NFC right now is the 49ers, and that team is 8-4. So you're two full games back in the win column right now if you're the Cowboys. That's not an easy road to climb with five games left. It might take them running the slate. Even though they're 6-5-1, they may need to finish 11-5-1 to get in. Similar to the Chiefs, because – and the difference for the Cowboys is they have that one tie, right? Mm-hmm. That one tie. If you finish 10-5-1, right, and someone else – or a 10-6-1 and – someone else is 11-6, right? And 11-6 is the seventh seed in the NFC. Man, that's, you're going to lose out, right? So it may take being 11-5-1. So I got five games left. Here's the slate, right? At the Lions, because that's the other team that's out right now, outside looking in, and the Lions are 7-5. Yeah. So even the Lions, who are outside looking in, are a half game ahead of you. That is a big game. That feels like a playoff game. Whoever loses that game is probably out. Right. If you're the Cowboys and you're at 6-6-1 with four games left, it's going to be tough. If you're the Lions and you're at 7-6 with four games left, you're going to have to run the slate at that point. Right. So you look at it and you're like, okay, that game is going to be a huge game in the NFC playoff picture, because both those teams are under the 49ers and both those teams need that win, one, to eliminate each other, but two, to keep kind of any kind of pace with the 49ers at that point. So their remaining schedule at Lions, big game, as we said, at home versus the Vikings. Depends on which version of J.J. McCarthy you see, right? If he's the version that went to Detroit and beat them, that's a tough game. If he's been the guy he's been the last couple weeks, you should win it, right? Yeah. Versus the Chargers.
I had had to drop him on fantasy. I was tired of looking at it. I was like, I thought this guy was going to be good. Got hurt, and now here we are.
We're not talking about the Vikings today, but all I'm going to say is don't give up on that guy yet. That's what I'll say. All right.
For the year, Vikings fans, I might have to. Next year, we could reassess.
Vikings fans, don't give up on that guy as your franchise quarterback, is what I'm saying. I'm not talking about fantasy football right now. Just don't give up on that guy as your franchise quarterback yet.
Yeah.
Anyway, they have the Chargers at home. Then they go at the Commanders and at the Giants. All right. So I would still say it's probably unlikely that they make the playoffs, because the NFC is too competitive this year. You know, the 49ers sitting at 8-4 in the seventh seed. The Lions being 7-5, outside looking in, you're 6-5-1. That's not an easy schedule.
In there too.
At the Lions, versus the Chargers, right? Those two games are going to be extremely difficult, and you're probably going to have to win both of them to give yourself a shot to get in. Now, they're playing really competitive, good football right now. The defense is tremendously better, right, since they traded for Quinn Williams and Logan Wilson, right? They've added those dudes. They're kind of getting healthier in some spots too. They are playing much better football. They just dug themselves too early, too big of a hole early in the season. Yeah. And they're going to have to keep winning in order to get themselves in that spot. And they've got some tough games coming up. I'm very intrigued to watch that Lions-Cowboys game next week, though, because I think that's a playoff-like game. We move it on to the last game of the evening. Jody, who'd we have?
We had the Bengals-Ravens. Joey B in his return. My man just wants to play football, do it with the boys. It's a children's game, as he said, and he loves playing it. I gotta admit, I was shocked. Johnny was like, "Hey, they're gonna pull it off." I was like, "You think so?" I was like, "Nah, bro, come on." He's like, "I'm telling you, Joey B returned, handled his business out there in Baltimore."
It's more than just his play as the quarterback. I think it's the leadership. I think the whole team elevates its game when he's playing. Yeah. The comfort level for those receivers. For everybody, right? Everybody feels better when Joe Burrow's playing football in Cincinnati. He came back in a big way, right? They had probably their most productive game on defense with him on offense. And that's, it's been the same thing, same story for a couple seasons for him now. And that's probably the best they've looked in quite some time. And Burrow looked healthy. So we start on the losing side of that again, the Ravens. All right. So, what is wrong with the Ravens offense? Right. For years, they've been one of the most productive offenses in the league, obviously, since Lamar Jackson became their quarterback. This year, they're only averaging 24 points a game, right, which is pretty low when you look at the Lamar Jackson era Ravens. And it's not just we missed Lamar, right, because everyone's going to say, okay, well, those numbers are skewed because they were missing Lamar for such a chunk of the season with the hamstring injury, right? In the last five games since he came back from that hamstring injury, they're actually averaging 23 points a game. So it's actually lower than what it's been for the entire season in those last five games, right? So they've been mostly winning, right? But they've really been doing it with their defense getting much better down the stretch here until last night. And the big problem with last night is, as I just said, the Bengals defense has been – just to put it bluntly, has sucked this year. Yeah. They've been awful, right? They haven't been able to stop a nosebleed. And all of a sudden, you know, this Ravens offense where you're sitting there looking like, hey, they've been winning, but their offense hasn't been playing that really well. This could be a get-right game for them. Instead, it went the other way. It was a get-right game for the Bengals defense, right? So it's a real question of, like, what's going on with the Ravens and Lamar? They have Derrick Henry, who's still producing at a high level. They should still be able to run the ball. They have the best group of skill players they've had around Lamar in a long time, with all the receivers and the tight ends and everything like that. And yet it feels like the offense is stagnant, right? Lamar, you know, I think has had to protect himself a little bit more as a runner because of the hamstring injury. He is starting to get not old, but he's older, right? He's getting to an age where he knows he's got to protect his body. Not using them as much in the run game.
You can't just take those hits constantly. You got to be able to get down and slide or get out of bounds.
Well, and that's the point is, like, his style of play, you can see it is evolving. He's become more of a pocket passer. And so I do wonder if some of that has taken away the dynamic part of their offense that made them so good, so difficult to defend. But also, you watch the game and they're just not producing the explosive plays that they were producing. And then even when they did last night, you know, you fumble going into the end zone and it's a big,
that was crazy as they likely.
So it is, they've mostly been winning these games and they're blessed to be in that spot, right? They were 1-5 and they're now 6-6. And I'm sure at the 1-5 start, they would have told you, we'll take 6-6 right away for sure. And they were leading the division going into this week, so they're going to have a battle on their hands with, the Steelers being 6-5 and having a chance to win this week. If the Steelers win, they reclaim the division, right? The lead. And they're sitting there at 6-6. Now, the Bengals, on the flip side of this, they're now 4-8. Let's say the Steelers lose this week. They're only two games back, right?
Yeah.
It does feel like, you know, highly unlikely is what I would say that they make the playoffs unless this division just goes sideways and they end up in a three-way tie with like the Steelers and the Ravens finishing 9-8 and they find a way to win out and finish 9-8. But even if they win out and go 9-8, still feels highly unlikely they make the playoffs again unless they get help from the Ravens and the Steelers, right? So should be interesting, but it's just fun to see Joe Burrow playing football again. Yeah. And with him, you kind of feel like, hey, maybe they have a chance, right? Maybe they got a shot to go make it. That was what was fun about this week's Thanksgiving games. All the games mattered. All the games featured teams like trying to get themselves into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so it was a great Thanksgiving slate.
All pretty good games too.
Pretty good games, and all like truthfully, they all went the opposite way of kind of what I was expecting going into the day.
I had the same thing before you even put that in our group chat. It was like sat there and I was like, ain't no way all these teams do it. You know what I mean? I was like, it's just you gotta go with what you feel. And all the chalk that we had didn't do us no good. It was not the case.
Should have seen the Lions loss coming, right? They always lose on Thanksgiving, even though they got one last year.
I saw the thing about the crescent moon pop up like midway through the game. I was like, never had a chance. It was written in the stars.
Written in the stars, he says. Okay. So we are going to finish this episode by looking at some college football, right? We've got Michigan and Ohio State, the game tomorrow. All right. And I texted Jody this week. Hey, you know what? I'm ready to get back on the pod, fire up the mics. Let's get this thing going. And this was the game I wanted to talk about because it is such a spectacle every year. It's such a big game, right? The stakes are always so high. It doesn't even matter what they're ranked or what the records are, what's on the line. It's just Michigan versus Ohio State is enough. Right, you don't have to put a number next to the name. You don't have to say that it's for the college football playoff. You don't have to say it's just who these two teams playing each other. Because last year, guess what? It was number one versus unranked, and who won? Unranked, right? It doesn't matter. The rankings don't matter. Throw them out the window.
What was the score?
13-10 last year. Yeah. So this has been just a brawl for years now. I mean, this is one of the, it's probably the best rivalry in sports. So fun game, setting the stage. Ohio State opened as a 12.5-point favorite. Some places it was 11.5. Now it's down to 9.5, which is about, you know, it's about what I expected. I thought it should be somewhere between 7 and 9 was what I would give Ohio State as a favorite there. Now it's settled at 9.5. That's about right. When it opened at 12.5, I thought that was, wow, that's pretty high. Forecast right now, low 30s, snow flurries.
Whoa. Where is this at? Is this Michigan?
It's in Ann Arbor. Yep.
Mm.
So what's on the line? We said you didn't have to put all that out there, but we always like to know. What's on the line? Right, 11-0, Ohio State secures a Big Ten championship bid. And likely a playoff bid with a win. They're probably in regardless with the playoffs, right? They're probably in even if they don't win this game. But winning ensures that they are there. There's nothing that could happen to them at that point where they wouldn't be in. Winning probably ensures that they have a bye week. I don't think the Big Ten championship would change much of in terms of that because they'd be playing Indiana. And the loser of that game probably doesn't deserve to lose a bye based on that game. So if they win, they probably secure a bye week for themselves. That's probably the bigger thing than the playoffs themselves because they're in the playoffs. 9-2, Michigan can put themselves in playoff in the playoff conversation with a win. If they get some help from Washington, they could also find themselves in the Big Ten championship game with a win. Right? Washington plays Oregon.
Okay.
If Washington beats Oregon and Michigan beats Ohio State, then it would be Michigan. Assuming Indiana's playing Purdue. So we're going to assume that Indiana is winning that game. And so it would be, you know, Indiana's three possible opponents are Ohio State if they win, Oregon if they win and Michigan wins, and then Michigan if Michigan wins and Washington wins, right? So those are the three possible opponents for Indiana in the Big Ten championship. So let's go through this game. Keys to the game, things to watch for, right? As a fan, when you're watching the game tomorrow, what should you be looking at? What should you be watching? We're going to start when Ohio State is on offense, all right? So we'll get a little share of the screen here, right? We got some film today. You know, Jody, we love the film, right? So here we go. All right, Jody, can you see?
Yeah, we're good.
The screen. All right, cool. So we're going to go through it. So Ohio State, the first key to the game is the Ohio State run game versus the Michigan run defense, right? Ohio State ranks 59th in the country in rushing yards per game at 160. They're only at 130 per game on the road. Michigan's defense ranks 9th in opponent rushing yards per game at only 94.3. And guess what? They're only allowing 77 yards per game at home. So if you could point to one stat in this rivalry and say, hey, that determines the game, there's some correlation there in terms of winning versus this stat. In this series, it's been the rushing yards battle, right? The team that has rushed for more yards in this game has won it for 23 straight years. Okay. so it is a huge key to the game is who runs the ball better, right? And so when we start with Ohio State on offense, right now, again, the last time Ohio State played a top 10 rushing defense was week one against Texas, right? Texas is number 8 in the country. They're only allowing, I think it was 91 yards per game, something like that. And Ohio State only recorded 77 yards on the ground when they played Texas in week one. Now, this has been a while, right?
That's kind of crazy.
And so there's a couple things when we look at why is Ohio State not run the ball well, okay? Number one, the O-line is not an elite group of just movers up front. They don't have like the size and girth of some of the previous Ohio State O-lines that just move people, right? So that's part of – it's part of why they've gone more gap scheme and insert runs recently, less zone runs, right? When you're a zone team and you can just kind of wash people and you can just go elephants on parade and just move people, move the line of scrimmage, right? That's a zone running team. Ohio State has typically for the last, basically since Ryan Day has been the head coach, right? That's typically what they've wanted to do. Now, last year with Chip Kelly, they went a little more gap scheme. This year, they're going even more gap scheme to help try and create more explosive runs for themselves because they're not that kind of team this year, right? So let's look at, you know, for example, this 3rd-and-1 against Texas, all right? They do try and run zone, right? They just try and move people up front. They don't go get the yardage required for the first down on that 3rd-and-1. Again, watch it again. Texas resets the line of scrimmage, right? Texas's D-line wins that battle on that play. That's not the kind of O-line that Ohio State has, right? So that's the number one reason they haven't been super elite movers up front of why they haven't been able to run the ball nearly as well. Okay. Number two, right? Compared to last year, right? They had the three-headed monster of Will Howard as the quarterback. Quarterback run was a huge element of their offense. And then you had Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson. And sometimes they put all three of those guys on the field together. And you're just like, man, who's getting the ball? And whoever, it doesn't really matter because they're going to run the ball hard. It's going to be tough to stop, right? This year, the quarterback, Julian Sain, who's a Heisman contender, is not really a threat in the run game. He does a lot of things well, but running the football is not his strength, right? This year, the Bo Jackson Jr. leads the attack of running, you know, their running backs, and it's not the Bo Jackson you're thinking of, unrelated. yeah, that's a thing that people are like, hey. And then they kind of have a mix of a couple other running backs that they use, but Bo Jackson has been the most productive.
Is it spelled the same or just spelled like B-E-A-U?
No, no, it's well, actually, I don't know how it's spelled. I think it's B-O, but I could be wrong. And so their run game has just been less dynamic. Here's a good example against Penn State, who obviously very talented football team, despite what the record says it's been this year. They've had their struggles, but a lot of talent, right? So you watch this. This is a gap run, like I talked about. Later in the year, they've been doing more gap runs. But look what happens on the edge here, right? This is a and actually, I'm a clip ahead right now. But this is an example of, right, gap run. This is an obvious pull read. Right, he can't hand this ball off. But he does, right? Because Julian's saying, again, not if that was Will Howard a year ago, even with seeing this end here, he pulls that and it's a race to the sideline. And I'm going to go get, you know, and maybe cut it up on the hash once I get here.
I don't even think he makes it that far. Number, whoever's right by your cursor gets beat too.
Yeah, and so it ends up being at least a 5-yard gain with your quarterback running the ball there, right? Yeah. But instead, it's a give because he's not a run threat, and that's a 4-yard loss, right? So that's the other reason why they're not as explosive and effective in the run game this year. Now, by the same token, here's an example of that gap run scheme, right? They're going to go counter, right? Guard, tight end counter, GH, right? Kick, wrap, hey, Bo Jackson, good run. Actually, it's not even Bo Jackson, but it's one of their other running backs. But an 11-yard run, that's how they've evolved this year from the Texas game, right, where you saw them still trying to run some zone running because that's been their identity. They've gone to some more gap stuff here to become a more efficient running offense, a little bit more explosive running offense. Now, have they become a team that you fear running the ball? No, but they've had more production there, and that's been the key is they've kind of changed schematically a little bit. The last thing and the last reason that they're maybe not running the ball as well, they throw the hell out of the ball with Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith, right? That makes their offense dangerous, even though they don't have an elite rushing attack. Okay, so there are some positives for them as to why they're not really running the ball. Sometimes they just don't have to, right? When you throw the ball the way they do with those guys, sometimes you just don't have to run the ball, okay? But they're not a huge rushing offense. Now, Michigan's run defense, right, doesn't have the big talent they had on the D-line last year. Kenneth Grant, Mason Graham, Josiah Stewart, all left for the NFL. Two of those guys were first-round picks. Josiah Stewart's a third-round pick, right? So they lost a lot up front. However, they've remained, as we said, with the numbers, an elite run defense outside of one game. USC was able to run the ball on them this year. John Mateer exposed them a little bit with the quarterback run game against Oklahoma. But Ohio State, we know, is, as we saw, doesn't have a quarterback that can exploit that. So I would say when you look at the rushing attack, Ohio State's offense versus Michigan's defense, this is a key to the game that should favor Michigan's defense, right? But it's something to watch for when Ohio State's on offense and they do try and run the ball. Do they have success? Okay. The second thing, right, is Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator for Michigan, how is he going to attack Ohio State's young O-line, right? Especially in the passing game. The last three Michigan DCs have all made fire zones a staple of their defense, right? You're talking about bringing a combination of five pass rushers while playing zone coverage with the other six guys behind it, right? That's what fire zones are. A lot of times you're playing 300 three deep or 400 two deep, something like that, while you're bringing five blitzers. That could be your 4D lineman plus a corner, your 4D lineman plus a nickel off the edge, a safety, one of the linebackers. It doesn't matter. The idea is that the offensive line can't identify who's coming, and you're still playing a safer zone behind it, right? And so a lot of Michigan's blitzes in the last 3 years have been that kind of fire zone, right? They blitz at around a 40% rate this year, which is high. It's hard for O-lines to pick up, right, because they never know who's coming. It'll be really interesting to see what Michigan does this year, though, against these Ohio State receivers. If you go back to the game last year, they didn't blitz much against Ohio State, but they got a ton of pressure with four, right? They knew they could win up with four up front. They had a nearly 50% pressure rate and two INTs, despite only blitzing 5% of the time, right? The youth of the Ohio State O-line could be a factor. Yeah, yeah. They completely changed the game plan for the Ohio State game. On defense, they didn't, you know, I think Ohio State expected to see pressures and have answers, and instead they didn't. They just won with four a lot. And so they caught Ohio State off guard last year. You know, you assume Ohio State's going to say, okay, we're ready for that this year. What is Michigan's counter? How do they game plan this year? The youth of that Ohio State O-line could be a factor in how he decides to attack them, whether or not he decides he needs to bring extra pass rushers in key moments. He's obviously going to need to balance avoiding unfavorable matchups against those Ohio State receivers, because Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith, make no mistake, are elite talents. They're probably both first-round picks, right? But they have to make Julian Sain uncomfortable, right? He's the type of pocket passer that if you give him a pocket, he's going to shred you, right? But if you don't, right, that's where he can make mistakes. And if he sticks to the game plan of rushing four and playing coverage, again, could favor Michigan if those four are winning. So let's look at what they did last year, right? This is from the game last year. Ohio State backed up. They got a 3rd and 9. Wink Martindale rushes 4. Look at the pocket. It's collapsing on him. He's got to throw it late, right? Or he's got to get the throw off. He throws it late outside, lets the ball float, and that becomes nearly a pick 6 for Michigan. It led to 7 points for Michigan. Huge play in that game. As you saw, it was second quarter early on. Ohio State's kind of in control, up 3-0. They had just gotten a goal line stand against Michigan, and that was a big play to kind of turn the tide of that game. Again, watch the pass rush. Derek Moore, who is back, right, it wins on that edge and causes the throw to come out quick. You've got Jayshon Barham for Michigan. His transition from being an off-ball linebacker to a pass rusher this year, kind of like Micah Parsons did his last year at Penn State. He's very productive, right? So they've got some guys up front who can win that way again, even though they lost a lot of talent to the NFL. Here's another one. 3rd and 7, critical play in the red zone later in the second quarter. Okay, rush 4. Get home, collapse that pocket, force an overthrow, right? Again, Will Howard and Julian Sain are two very different quarterbacks, but they both, if you get pressure, right, you get pressure in their face, it's hard for a quarterback to make that throw that he needs to make, right? And it's good coverage behind it, too. There's not anywhere for him to put the ball, forces a field goal by Ohio State, okay? So that's going to be critical to the game as well. What does Wink Martindale do to attack the Ohio State O-line? Does he trust his four? Does he bring extra guys? And when he does, what are they playing behind it, right? Don't give Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith a ton of one-on-ones. You can't do that. Those guys will shred you, all right? Okay, so we flip the script. Now when Michigan is on offense and Ohio State is on defense, we really want to look at you flip the script. It's still focused on the run game, right? We talked about why that's so important. For Michigan, it's their identity, right? The Michigan O-line has gotten better and better throughout the season. They're the 10th ranked rushing offense at 224 yards per game. One of only a few teams that are ranked top 10 in both rushing offense and rushing defense. They have a number of backs, from Justice Haynes, who hasn't played in a little while, to Jordan Marshall, who also missed their last game, and even recently Bryson Cuzdall, who's the 3rd-string running back, ran for 100 yards, right, against Maryland. And then you've also got Bryce Underwood, the quarterback, who is a factor in the run game, and they haven't seen a ton of quarterback design run this year from Michigan, but you know they can do it, and that kid is capable of it, right? It's created some balance, taking some pressure off Underwood as a passer, but this week you have a different challenge because Ohio State ranks 3rd in opponent rushing yards per game. They're only giving up 77.5. All right, Michigan has previously played a top 3 rushing defense earlier in the season at Oklahoma, and they still ran for 146 yards, a good performance, but one that ended in a 24-13 loss at Oklahoma, right? So critical matchup here, one that I would say the data suggests should give Ohio State a small edge, right? Yeah. But let's look at the Michigan running game against that Oklahoma team, right? That top 3 rush defense in Oklahoma. Okay, this is what most of the game looked like. Michigan tries to run a split zone rushing attack, right? They're zoning left, bringing Bredesen back right, or zoning to their right, bringing Bredesen back left, right, and running a split zone look. It doesn't go for anything, right? It's a 2-yard gain.
Those yards, huh?
It was a struggle all night, right? Oklahoma did a very, very good job stacking the box, daring Bryce Underwood to throw and saying, you're not going to run the ball at the success that you normally are able to run the ball as a Michigan team, right? You can even see there's a flag thrown. I think holding was the call on Michigan here. Tough play for Michigan. Now, the thing about Michigan is they are stubborn. They will stick with the run game. They've shown that the last couple of years with Sherrone Moore as the head coach, and even going back to Jim Harbaugh when he was the head coach, right? They run a similar looking play. Oh, wait, no, it's actually counter, right? So now they bring that motion back. It looks like he's going to run that same motion. They're going to zone right, kick out left. Now it actually becomes counter to the right. Hey, we got a kick. We got a wrap, GH, right? And Justice Haynes has the vision to cut this thing back, and this becomes a 75-yard touchdown run to open up the second half. Now, again, that 146 is deceiving because 75 of it came on this play. Right. So if Michigan doesn't get an explosive run like that, then they don't have a huge
right at that average then, huh?
Yeah, they're right at that, 75 yards a game that Oklahoma and Ohio State are giving up. But that's the thing. Michigan does live on some of these explosive runs, and they generally tend to create them. The big thing is, you know, you see all over the place, Jordan Marshall, their second string running back, who's, you know, they play with a two back kind of style, right? Jordan Marshall, who's that other back, should be back for this game, right? Justice Haynes, we don't know. A lot of it was saying he wouldn't be back until bowl season, playoffs, whatever they end up in. But there are some suggestions that he may give it a go, right? And so if he does, you could see some runs like that from either he or Jordan Marshall. But Ohio State should have a small edge in this factor in this game. We'll see, right, overall when you stack up both teams' run game, who's able to run the ball better, because the likelihood is whoever does that better will win this game, right? The next thing, much like when we looked at Michigan's defense, we want to ask, man, how does Matt Patricia, the Ohio State defensive coordinator, attack Michigan's offense, right? You've got the young quarterback versus the Super Bowl winning defensive coordinator, right? Bryce Underwood is an 18-year-old true freshman. Now, he's not starting his first game like Arch Manning was when he saw Patricia earlier in the season, but he's only starting his 12th game of his career, and he is still 18. He hasn't seen everything, right? This could be the determining factor, I think, in this game. Michigan needs Underwood to be an efficient chain mover with maybe 2 to 3 big-time plays in the game to win it, right? They can't afford poor decisions or turnovers. Matt Patricia is going to dial up different looks like he did for Arch Manning when Texas played Ohio State early in the year. You know, Michigan's been really living on some of these RPOs throughout the year when Underwood makes the correct choice. But if you go back to like the Northwestern game, he threw a pick when he didn't see a safety coming down, right? Looks open, should have get handed the ball off instead of pulling it out to throw it, right? And so they are tough for a defense to stop. But if Matt Patricia is disguising looks and he's game planning for that stuff and they use Caleb Downs in unique ways, it could be a way to bait Underwood into a mistake, right? And if that happens, can Michigan survive that? I don't think so, right? So how will Michigan call the game to either protect or unleash Underwood? And can they lean on their three targets in the passing game, right? Andrew Marsh, Donovan McCulley, Marlon Klein, their tight end. Those are the three big names when they throw the ball, right? Those guys are going to have to win versus one-on-one coverage, right? But overall, when you look at this, this is another factor of the game that should favor Ohio State, right? I like both defenses in this game for good reason, okay? So we watch this play. Look at what Texas is doing, right? Or Ohio State's doing. This is that big, everyone was talking about this. I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, but after this game, everyone was talking about coffee house blitz stunt, right? It looks like this linebacker who's on the line of scrimmage is going to drop out, but then he comes back late. And they were doing all kinds of stuff to confuse Arch, right? That's still only a 4-man pass rush with a spy, right? Caleb Downs is spying here, or is dropping to the hook and ends up spying Arch Manning. And it looks like they're going to bring extra guys, like they're going to bring 5 and it's a fire zone. No, it's only 4. It's only a 4-man pressure, but they get the sack because they confuse both Arch and that Texas O-line, right? So Matt Patricia is going to have that kind of stuff in his bag to confuse Underwood. Underwood's going to have to be well prepared and be able to execute versus those kind of looks if Michigan wants a chance to win this game. Here's another version of this, right? 2nd and 13, drop back passing situation for Arch. Delayed blitz flushes him out of the pocket. Do they get a sack here? No. Arch ends up running for like 10 yards and has to use his legs. But if you look at the coverage down the field, it's perfectly executed coverage wise. The spy just doesn't get Arch on the ground right here, but he could have, right? Close. And Arch does a good job of extending the play, running for a first down. But that was the kind of stuff he was having to do just to get them a first down in that game. That's why that game was 14-7, right? Because even though Ohio State couldn't run the ball on offense, their defense dominated. And I believe we could see a very similar kind of game here against Michigan, right? The last kind of key to the game, and that's really, as far as film study goes, that's really what it comes down to, those two things, or those, you know, offensively and defensively. And I, like I said, I think I favor both offenses at this point. So what is likely to, you know, if we feel like both defenses have advantages in these areas, you know, what are the other factors that will determine the game? Okay. We got the head coaching matchup, right? You got the head coaching matchup, Sherrone Moore versus Ryan Day, right? In terms of the game management, you know, I think both fan bases have been known to complain about these head coaches and their management of game situations. You know, when should you go for it? When do you use a timeout? How many extra plays or possessions can you create for your team? Those are the margins that may determine big games like this. But for Sherrone Moore, He has experience managing this specific game at a higher level than Ryan Day. He's beaten them each of the last 2 years, right? And managed both those games extremely well. While Ryan Day is having arguably the best stretch of his career, right? The best stretch of 15 games as his as a head coach at Ohio State since they lost to Michigan last year. He hasn't lost a game, right? So you would say, man, Ryan Day's on a heater right now. However, in this game specifically, recent history suggests that's a small edge to Michigan, right? And then the last thing, special teams. The case last year was the game comes down to some kicks, right? And while Dominic Zavada, the Michigan kicker, won the game last year with two field goals for Michigan, he's been anything but reliable this year. He's only making 63% of his field goals. Meanwhile, Ohio State has converted nearly 87% of their field goals. So that's another edge to Ohio State. So overall, I see this thing kind of like, if you're going keys to the game both ways, I'm like kind of tied, right? Both teams have a quarterback who's starting his 12th game, right? Julian Sain is a redshirt freshman. Bryce Underwood's a true freshman, right? The numbers, the weather report, the film says this should be a defensive slugfest. Should be a very low-scoring game, right? Ohio State, one of the best defenses in the country. They get to see a young quarterback in just his 12th start, first in the game, right? Michigan's defense is built to make Ohio State one-dimensional and has the secondary to match up and take away some of the explosive passing game while getting pressure with four. I think Ohio State has more talent, more experience, right? Michigan is one of the youngest teams in the Big Ten, but Michigan has a big mental edge in the series, as you saw with the game last year. They went on the road as 20-point underdogs and won that thing, and I think it was all due to the mental edge that they had, right? So my expectation as the in terms of game flow, I think Michigan will score early in the game and take a lead, right? And then I think Ohio State will come back and dominate the second and third quarter to kind of take it back, right? But I think Michigan will eventually do just enough in the passing game to allow their run game to win it for them late. And while I think Ohio State will make some plays in that second and third quarter, I don't think it'll be enough. I think I have Michigan winning the game 23-21 in just a wire-to-wire battle. No team's ever really able to take control of the game. Even though Michigan scores early, I think Ohio State kind of battles back, takes the lead in the third quarter, and then you see Michigan kind of win it late, being able to run the ball in the snow. Again, I think Michigan will eventually win the rushing battle, and that's why they'll win the game. Okay. The big thing is Underwood's got to have to play clean, right? Yeah. And if you're Ohio State, Sain needs to play clean. Ohio State threw two interceptions last year. That really cost them. So you need those young quarterbacks both need to play clean, and you need to be able to win the rushing battle up front. And right now, I would say, if you look at the data and everything, that suggests Michigan has an edge there. So I'm going to go with Michigan again for a fifth year in a row, even though I think Ohio State has every chance and opportunity to win this game.
Oh, no, the way it sounds to me, I feel like QB play. Because your guy, I mean, you said they both only have 12 starts as of this game starting. But
yep,
you got the true freshman for you guys. And then the weather will be two main factors in my eyes. Because if it's snowing, like at a decent pace, it'll be a lot of running regardless.
Tougher to throw, yeah.
Yeah. So that would favor you guys, like you said, at that point. But who knows, man? I don't see many points coming in this game as well. I don't think. I mean, I think yeah, the last right, two have been pretty down there, but I don't know where it sits at. I'm just saying, strictly off of vibes, I think it's going to be low scoring again. And then, say Ohio State does lose again. What does that mean for them? Like, in the playoff, that seems like that's a bad way to go down this late, you know? And not just that, it's like there's going to be more film again of how to beat them. But last year, clearly they were still the top dog regardless.
Yeah, I think if you're Ohio State and you lose the game, you can go into the same mode you went into last year, which was, okay, we lost. We're still in the playoff. Let's go win the playoff.
Yeah.
You know, and they did it last year, so nothing says they can't do it again. And I don't think it's – yes, it will sting for them to lose a fifth time in a row, but I don't think for them it's really changes their playoff outcome. Maybe they don't have the bye and they have to play in the first round.
And say, what if they lose this and then the championship? Like,
If they lose this, they're probably not in the Big Ten. They're actually not probably. They aren't in the Big Ten championship because Michigan or Oregon would be in over them at that point.
Oh, are they undefeated in the division if they would win?
So Ohio State is 11-0 undefeated in Big Ten play. Michigan is 9-2. They only have one loss in Big Ten play. So if they beat Ohio State, they both have one loss, and Michigan would have the head-to-head. So Ohio State can't lose this game and the Big Ten title game. They either win this game and go to the Big Ten championship, or they lose and they're out of it. That's why I say that would be the only reason. Maybe they slide to fifth at that point, and they have to play in the first round. But that's about all that's on the line for them in terms of this game, other than just the rivalry and trying to control the rivalry itself. You know, I didn't look at the over-under on points, you know, because I don't think I would – if I was a betting man, I don't think I would bet either team in this game. I think it's a tough game to bet. I would probably take the points for Michigan, yes. I don't think I would bet a money line either way. Uh-huh. I think the better bet is the over-under. I said 23-21 Michigan, right? So I had it at 44 total points. Depending on which sports book you look at, it's either 43.5 or 44.5. So I'm really good because I did not look at that before I made my prediction.
It's around 45. I don't even
keep up with 43.5. So if you're getting it at 43.5, I guess I'm predicting the over by a half point. And if you're getting it at 44.5, I'm predicting the under by a half point. I think I would just take the under. If I was going to bet something on this game, I think I would take the under on total points rather than Michigan covering or Ohio State covering or the money lines. I think I would just take the under and call that the better bet. Although it's going to be hard for it to be under that point total and Ohio State to cover 9.5 or whatever it is, you know, right around 10 points. That's going to be tough. So unless you're predicting Ohio State to win like 21, you know, 7. Yeah. So long story short, enjoy the games. Have some fun. Watch this game tomorrow specifically. It's going to be the best one of the day in terms of, you know, everything on the line and a ton of fun. So
are they doing like the big game or noon or anything like that out there?
Big noon kickoff is there and College Game Day is there, which is what happened last year too. Yeah, so both networks are there. It'll be Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt on the call. They've been on the call for the last like 5 years. It'll be a good one. So, before we go, you got a banger of the week, if you will. We got to go old school.
Banger of the week. Ooh, let me think. That's been a minute.
I got one for you.
I've seen Fantastic Four recently. That was pretty good. Oh, I think it looked nice. Yeah. Okay. I think the ending was kind of predictable, which was kind of annoying, but like I think aesthetically it was very nice looking. Like it wasn't anything too crazy out of that realm. And I don't really remember watching the one that had who was it? Oh man. I want to say like Bradley. Oh no, it was who Captain America. He was in the one when we were a kid.
Chris Evans.
Yeah, he was Johnny in the one in like 2005 or whatever year it was. And so I don't really remember much from that one. So like it was nice to see what this one would look like, especially since it's like set in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have recently, you know, the season 5 of Stranger Things came out.
Oh, you were big on that?
You know, I love that show. Yeah, good show. So Jill had only watched like the first season and never went back to it. So she and I have been binge watching the entire series. We're in season 3 right now. Good show. Just as good as I remember. If you're somebody who's like, should I watch? I'm like, yeah, go watch it, dude. It's good. We're in like the middle of season 3. She's actually upset with me right now because I made her pause it because we had to do this podcast. Oh. So, you know, when we click off, I'm going to go back and watch.
I was an hour.
No, late. Yeah. we're going to go back and watch. We're going to keep watching. We're going to try and get ourselves to season 5. Like, I don't know, before the weekend's over.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. So be on the lookout for that if you're a Stranger Things fan. That is out. They're doing like a weird release thing where they did like the first half of season 5 just released. Then the second half of season 5 Christmas releases on Christmas.
Yeah.
The series finale, just the last episode, releases on New Year's Eve. So pretty cool little rollout that they're doing.
Spread it out.
So yeah, excited for that. And you know, excited to finish it up and all that good stuff. But yeah, man, good to record with you, big dog,
and
get back on the on the saddle. But until next time, let's hope we can get kind of on a regular schedule to finish out football season here.
Yeah,
we're gonna try. But until next time, you know, we'll see y'all and
let Joe, Ray gotta, Ray.
Yeah.
Ray, take that out.
Working all year, look into my eyes, there's hunger, there's no fear. Talking like y'all ready, bro, I promise you we coming. Anybody that want it can get it, play it's nothing. We ain't never worried about listening to the chatter, cause when we get on the field, we know that none of it matter. I've been through a lot, man, can't nothing faze me. Got the student section and the stands going crazy. Everybody turning up, we putting on a show. Boomers, we be popping and the people, yeah, they love. 951 be the city, never change. We the Chaparral Boomers, everybody know the name. We ain't here to make friends, we gon' let them see. Get your chain snatched like a key crab tree. Squad for lagoons, be ready to bring the pain. Show them how we do, we about to let it bang. About to go and get it, kill them with the swag. Tryna act tough, they be looking, we just laugh. See them getting mad, cause they know we ain't stressed. Be prepared for this moment, we done passed all the tests. Been through the rain, been through the struggle. We ain't never break, we just put on more muscle. Put on for the city, man, running with the pride. Friday night in lights when the Pumas come alive. Throw your Pumas up, we gon' get it, that's right. Friday night lights, we turn up tonight. In the best spot, if you on the other side. Time to let it bang, make them feel that Puma pride. Let it bang, let it bang, let it bang, yeah. Let it bang, show them how Puma do it. Let it bang, yeah. Turn me up, let it bang, let it bang, let it bang, let it bang. Let it put on for the city, that's really all that we do. Yep. Nothing to lose and a whole lot to prove. On the field late and I'm in the gym early. Overtime on my grind, I can see them worry. Put the pads on, we about to bring the boom. The Legion of Doom, everybody better make room. You can see the fumes from the fire. Product of the pain and the hunger and desire. Talking like you want it, man, I hope you ain't lying. Bottom line, we the Boomers, but we feeling like some lions. Dropping off heat at your feet every week. Everybody want to be a beast till it's time to eat. Oh, we gon' see if you really bought it. Deacon, you can handle me, boy, I really doubt it. Putting in work, being steady with the grind. You ain't taking nothing, player, this is all mine. Throw your Pumas up, we gon' get it, that's right. Friday night lights, we turn up tonight. In the best spot, if you on the other side. Time to let it bang, make them feel that Puma pride. Let it bang, let it bang, let it bang, yeah. Let it bang, show them how Puma do it. Let it bang, yeah. Turn me up, let it bang, let it bang, let it bang, let it bang. Let it blood, sweat, tears, time getting near. I've been saying that for so long, now it's here. Come through the whole chin, checking everybody. We just put them in the dirt, man, treat it like a hobby. Oops, I mean habit, L's can't have it. We ain't standing around waiting for nothing, we grab it. I remember putting in work all alone. Now my team with me and we all in the zone. Never giving nothing, so you better understand. We don't care about your plan, this is Puma Pride Land. Get into the huddle, tell the fellas, turn it up. Fourth quarter coming, throw them double deuces up. Let them know what's up, man, the crowd never dying. Refy, keep holding me, man, quit crying. Put your Pumas up, show them Puma pride. Friday night lights when the Pumas come alive. Throw your Pumas up, we gon' get it, that's right. Friday night lights, we turn up tonight. In the best spot, if you on the other side. Time to let it bang, make them feel that Puma pride. Let it bang, let it bang, let it bang, yeah. Let it bang, show them how Puma do it.